Hey, this is Daniel. Thanks for listening to DIY Money. If you haven't already, be sure to give us a 5-star review on iTunes so your friends know that they can learn from the show. Now, enjoy the show. Welcome in, y'all. This is another edition of DIY Money.
You changed that.
I did.
Where was I?
I don't know if I like that. It might be a little too Paula Deen.
That was like...
Oh, my God. Be gentle.
Full on Kentuck.
Yeah, it really was.
Y'all.
Yeah, well...
We just lost everybody on the West Coast.
They're out. They're gone. What's shaking, Daniel?
Not too much.
Did you do a bracket?
I did with my cycling friends.
Mm.
So we're going into the final weekend.
You have Purdue,
To win, or the
UConn.
That one, the school that has like a dog or something.
Yeah,
UConn. All I know is like on my final two, I have a dog and a pee. So Purdue and a dog.
So you have both of them playing each other.
Each other, yeah. But
well,
there's
that's impressive, Daniel.
Two people in the top. So there's like the top four. There's two of us that have what was it? UConn.
UConn.
And Purdue. And two of us that have Purdue. My best bet is that Purdue and UConn go to the final, and then Purdue wins.
Then you win, basically.
I think then I win based upon how I'm reading it.
So we did a bracket, too, and I had a bracket group that I made that had about 45 brackets in it. I am currently in first place.
Wow.
Which is really, really surprising because I picked Kentucky to go the whole way. I picked Kentucky to go the whole way, but I got three out of the other four in the final. So besides NC State, I got Alabama, I got UConn, and I got Purdue in the final four.
See.
The only way I win, though, only way I get first is if NC State wins. But if they win, I got first place.
So math is against you.
So I'm cheering for the Cinderella story.
That's what happens when you pick UK. Math is against you.
It was, you know, it was painful, but I thought, oh, I'm totally, like, I'm done after the first game of the weekend.
You held
up. I always pick based on my heart. I never pick based on my brain. So I'm always like, yeah, Kentucky all the way. I couldn't even make a second bracket. I was like, I should make a second bracket where Kentucky doesn't win it. And I was like, I started doing the second bracket and I picked Kentucky to win it again. So I just kept with the first bracket. But I could win. I could win it all. We just got NC State to beat Purdue and beat, I don't know.
I pick very randomly. There's no
reason. Alabama's been really good too, though. SEC school has been... They've been fantastic in this tournament. So, very interesting. Okay, we have some
Don't
announcements. Sponsored this episode and all episodes by Jewel Financial. Check us out on our website, jewelfinancial.com. That's J-O-U-L-E financial.com. Send us your questions to the podcast, podcast@diymoney.org. That's podcast@diymoney.org. Still a little dry on the junior questions, so would love a question from
Where it is, there's one coming up, though.
What
soon?
Is it? There is?
There's
okay.
one coming up soon. Yeah.
Good, good.
But
so
we need more.
Keep those coming in. Social media pages, DIY Money Podcast on all of your social pages. Check out some of the content that we're putting out there. Okay, let's get to our question. We got a good one today from Lance. Lance, what do you got? DIY!
Hey, DIY Money crew. Lance from snowy Minnesota here with a question about whole life insurance. When my daughter was first born, my wife and I started a small whole life insurance policy for her, and we did so not as an investment for her, but rather as a security measure just in case she has some kind of health event in her youth that would prevent her from qualifying for life insurance later in life. This whole life policy includes the guaranteed insurability rider that will allow her to increase coverage at specific dates in the future if she desires, without having to answer health questions or prove insurability. She's now 4 years old, and it was about a year ago we decided to start a custodial brokerage account for her. Now, each month that I pay a life insurance premium, I think about what that money could do over time if I put it into her brokerage account instead. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on this situation, and if you think I should look at canceling the whole life policy and redirecting those dollars to the brokerage account. One other quick note, I was able to secure a small amount of life insurance for her through my job. Now, obviously, it's tied to my employment at this company, but it's just kind of another piece of information to consider. Thanks for all you do, and looking forward to hearing your thoughts.
Lance, thank you so much for your question. And from Minnesota, I got to say,
Minnesota.
we have a nice contingent of people in Minnesota. We have a good...
I want to go visit.
In the north, Wisconsin, Minnesota, so shout out to our people up there.
Yeah, righto.
You ever been to Minnesota?
Oh, yeah. My family is from... Green Bay, Wisconsin, originally. So I've been up in that northern area
over
a lot.
There. Yeah, I don't think I've ever been to Minnesota.
Twin Cities? Never been in the...
I can't recall ever having ventured that way. even growing up in Illinois?
Well, I have family that also lives in Hudson, Wisconsin, which is right next to the Twin Cities. So that's really...
I had a friend from Minnesota send me a picture of his very snowy yard recently, the other day when it was like 70 here.
Oh,
and I laughed at him.
That's
and
painful.
Then we woke up this morning. It's like 20 this morning.
Yeah, I know. So Kentucky weather is just so like all over the place. At least when you're in the north, you like look, it's just going to snow. It's going to be cold until June.
Yeah.
And then it'll be beautiful for a couple months.
Yeah, you got that right.
So let's help our Minnesotan friend here with some perspectives.
So whole life policy for a child.
What that is.
I've actually seen this a lot. I've seen a lot of cases where there's been whole life policies that have been opened up on kids. Or a lot of adults that have said, yeah, my parents opened this whole life policy for me 30 years ago, and now I've been continued to pay the premiums on it, et cetera, et cetera. So, Daniel, I know we cannot give Lance specific advice because we don't know his whole situation. We don't know family health history or exactly, or his daughter's history or anything like that. But talk a little bit about insurance and when that normally is something you would go out and purchase.
Certainly. So two most basic or prevalent types of insurance that people will see is term, which is what it sounds like. It lasts for a certain term. So 5, 10, 20 years, 10, 15, 20 years, somewhere in there, right, is what most people will get, something of that nature. And then there's whole life, which also kind of like the name, generally lasts your whole life, unless you decide to cancel it prior. And so you have to kind of choose between those two. Now, term is generally exceptionally cheaper because you're only paying for a specific term. You're usually buying it well before, say, your retirement years. Usually you're buying it when you have a family still in the household, like kids and stuff like you have liabilities or people that are depending on you. Dependents would be the better word for it, probably from a CPA staring at me across the room right now. Dependents rather than liabilities, right? The best way to describe a kid. Yeah. Anyhow, not a lot of humor coming from the CPA corner this morning. Anyhow.
Well, you just mind your P's and Q's, Buster, and remember who you're dealing with.
Yeah. So that's typically when people will utilize insurance, and they'll typically utilize term because once those dependents, i.e. kids, leave the house and you've built up retirement assets and things like that, there's just, for a lot of people and a lot of people's financial plans, less reason to have life insurance because now you have built up assets which can do what the life insurance would have otherwise done, which is like pay for funeral expenses, pass on to heirs, things like that. You also have less people depending on your income, which now doesn't even exist anymore because you're in retirement. So as people gravitate towards retirement, typically insurance will fall off, which is kind of why people lean towards term.
And the other aspect is normally debt. So paying off existing debts that you might have outstanding.
Mortgages, auto payments,
things like that. And as you get closer to retirement, hopefully those things are paid off or very close to being paid off. So there's not that liability hanging over the heads of your family, basically, if you were to pass. Or you have the assets that would cover that somewhere
else. Yeah, definitely. So in a pretty traditional basic financial plan, there's quite often not a necessity or a need to have life insurance once you get to those ages. Now, there are certain strategies where that's a layer on the strategy for things like estate planning and things of that nature. But if we're talking about just basic needs, like making your financial plan work, having some funds left over for you to have a funeral and then give some to the next generation, for most cases, or for a lot of cases, from a financial planning perspective, it's just not needed at that point in life, which is typically why then you look at term, because term is going to cover the time that you need for a lot of people at a cost that's cheaper than insuring your whole life. And well, why is that? Because if you're buying a term insurance policy, say, for your ages 30 to 50, you know, when you have kids in the house, you have mortgages you're paying down, you're still building up retirement, you're in your high earning years. And so you want to ensure that if you die during that time, your family has funds that kind of replace or cover all of that. Well, if you think about statistically for 30 to 50 year olds, the odds of you passing away, dying in that time is dramatically lower than the odds of you passing away at ages 85 to 90. So if you're insuring only age 30 to 50, the insurance company is willing to let you pay much less for that because the risk of them having to pay out is significantly less. If you insure your whole life until the day that you die, the expense is going to be higher because as long as you continue to make the premiums and you keep the policy, the insurance company knows that at some point they'll have to pay out. Now, getting into the weeds, the cost of that insurance is not precisely probably the cost of you dying because the insurance company also knows that most people who buy whole life will cancel the policy before they die. If you think about somebody in their 30s or 40s buying a whole life policy, the odds of them keeping that until they're 80 is generally pretty low. Life comes up or things change and they change that. So they can, you know, adjust the price slightly in there. But yeah, it's dramatically different sort of equation of values. And if you work with an advisor or financial planner, they should be able to run those scenarios and show you kind of what that looks like.
Okay, so now let's shift gears a little bit and talk about a child. So you're not talking about someone that's 30 to 50 and trying to get a policy, but trying to insure, well, Lance is trying to insure his daughter and have some protection there in case, his words was that in case she's not able to get insurance in the future because, I don't know, disability or something, something that could happen in the future. So talk a little bit more about that for from a child's perspective.
Certainly. So we don't have life insurance on our kids at this point. A lot of what I've seen with people who buy life insurance, like grandparents who buy life insurance for kids or parents and stuff like that, is not having the guaranteed insurability that Lance talked about. So they're buying kind of like a policy, you know, a $10,000 whole life policy.
Right.
Now they're paying on it, you know, or $20,000 or something like that. The problem is that it sounds decent, like, you know, 10 or 20 grand, but it's not adjusted for inflation. So you're paying a premium and you're getting, you know, let's say you even held that to 30, 40, 50 years old and the kid's right now like 10. You're talking about decades that go by and the benefit is not increasing with inflation.
The death benefit.
The death benefit. So you're talking about decades from now, you're going to get that 10 or 20 grand if you pass away, but it's going to be a drop in the bucket compared to your overall needs from a financial planning perspective. So whilst it's sort of a good, you know, intentioned move, it probably is not going to move the needle in the overall plan. So that's one way that I've seen a lot of it, not having that sort of guaranteed insurability aspect. Now, what I think is unique and interesting about what Lance has done, and it actually makes me think a little bit, is he's basically paying a premium for insurance, but locking in the fact, kind of hedging or insuring against the fact that if his daughter is has some type of medical ailment or condition or accident or something like that where the cost of insurance would be much higher later, it sounds like the policy set up with that guaranteed insurability benefit to where to some extent she can raise that benefit in the future. Now, usually there's some limits on that.
Right, right.
Like if this policy is $25,000 or $50,000 and she develops some life-altering condition, the insurance company is not going to suddenly insure her for $10 million. So right. there's a cap on usually what you can raise that at any of those intervals. But the fact that you can do it is an interesting strategy. And if the family has extra margin and they're thinking of it in that terms, like, hey, here's a way to protect our kids in the future to have insurance. Now, I think you'd have to calculate sort of the rough odds, like what are the odds that any individual is going to have really low levels of insurability in their 20s or 30s around the time that they have kids and a family and stuff like that. I mean, the statistics.
It's difficult to say that. Like, your probability is pretty
low, except for if it happens to you.
Exactly.
And then your probability is
100%. Right.
So the downside is if it does happen, then you'll wish you had an insurance or something like that. So that's hard. So I think that's an interesting strategy. If the policy is low cost, I mean, I would be intrigued to see that whole scenario and stuff like that.
Well, when I evaluate whole life policies for folks, or universal life is another one that we see often, which is similar but slightly different in certain ways. But when I evaluate whole life policies, I really think about the opportunity cost. And Lance, that was one of the things you mentioned is, hey, I have this brokerage account. custodial account I've been building up for my daughter. I'm looking at that side and seeing how that's growing so much. You might have a little cash value on your whole life policy, but it's obviously not growing at a significant rate. So the opportunity cost is something you have to calculate when you're thinking about these things. Now, if you are looking at that probability percentage of what happens if my daughter has an issue or something, that's a factor. But then also, okay, if I'm putting $100 a month, I'm making up numbers, $100 a month here, what does that look like if I'm putting $100 a month into the custodial account in the S&P 500 fund, and that's growing at an average of an 8-10% rate over time? Is that going to give me a similar benefit, or is that going to give me a good amount of money that's building up and kind of serves a similar purpose that you're doing with the whole life policy? Would that be a good way to think about it too?
Yeah, totally. I think you have to definitely separate insurance from investing or savings.
We always say commonly in our office, insurance is not an investment necessarily.
Yeah, it's insurance. It's a safety net. It's passing off the risk to the insurance company, and you're paying for that via premium, is literally what insurance is and should be.
Right.
When you mix savings or investing in it, that's where it gets really muddy. So what typically happens in these scenarios, and we see this with our wealth development crowd, a lot of listeners at DOI Money who come to us and do plans and focus on retirement saving, building up their wealth, stuff like that. If they have these policies that have been put in place by grandparents or parents, more often than not, in their 20s or 30s, if they have a cash value, they take the cash value out.
Yep.
And then they're done. Rarely do they inherit them and keep paying on them. Sometimes you'll see where they've inherited a fully paid policy, and then they'll just kind of keep it going. Eventually, maybe they'll borrow on the cash value or things like that. So effectively, most people that I've seen that have these, not saying that your daughter will be this way, Lance, but most people, by the time they get to their 20s and 30s, utilize this in some other way than whole life insurance. And
yeah.
So like, I kind of like what Lance is doing in protecting and setting up his daughter. I think look forward into the future and realize that most of them will then turn around and look at it like, how do I just access this cash?
Mm-hmm.
And so I like what you're saying, because if you were to put that into potentially a custodial account or something like that, then they have the access to that, and it's built up and things like that. So I guess you'd have to look at like, what is your overall sort of strategy to set up your daughter financially? And if you are already doing custodial accounts or other things like that, and then this is just supplementing that with, oh, we also want to set her up with being insurable in her 20s and 30s, then maybe it's good.
Mm-hmm.
If those other things aren't covered, you know, things like education or just general savings and investing for her, those could be, if you really sat down and ran the numbers and looked at it, those could be a higher priority than this particularly, I would think.
Yeah, and I would say just in a general thought process of Lance, as well as anybody else that's considering a whole life or a universal life policy, make sure you're considering those based on the insurability aspect of it, not the investment side of it. Because if you are focused on an insurance product that is an investment, quote unquote, you're probably going to be disappointed long term with what that investment does. Now, that's not a recommendation necessarily. I don't want to get in trouble with compliance. Daniel's giving me the eyes a little bit, but
just keep them separate. We tend to like keeping them separate.
You keep it separate. You have insurance on one side, you have your investments on another side. It's typically why we like term life policies. It sounds like, Lance, you do have some kind of term life benefit for your daughter through work, which is great, but we typically like term life policies because it's doing what insurance should do. It's providing that safety net. It's having you a bucket that is going to be provided if something terrible happened, and then you have your investments on the other side that are growing for the long term.
Yeah, I will say that our insurance guy that we had way back when our first kid was born, because we added like the contingent beneficiaries on our life insurance, he's like, oh, sent us like reflexively the kid life insurance package policy and all that, and I ran the numbers and I was like, am I running these numbers correctly? Because this doesn't seem like a great deal.
I distinctly ordered the Antarctic Blue Super Sports Wagon with the CB and the optional Rally Fun Pack.
I was like, are these the same numbers you're getting? He's like, yeah. I was like, yeah, we're not going to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So in that particular scenario, it was definite no, because we actually ran the numbers on it, and I was like, this just doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah.
And he didn't disagree with my numbers. He didn't really say whether or not he would advise against, for it or against it, but he definitely could not poke any holes in the math that I ran. So that was telling. But not every policy is like that. You have to run your own numbers.
Yeah, good. Okay, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you for the question, Lance. Lance sent his question to podcast@diymoney.org. That's podcast@diymoney.org. Just recorded it probably on his phone. Sent that directly to that email, and we used it on the show. So he'll get a $25 Amazon gift card. Thanks for joining us, friends. The secret to wealth really is very simple. Live on less than you make. Invest the rest. Do so for a very long time. Make it a great one.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the show. If you want your question aired on the show, be sure to send that to us and you'll get a $25 Amazon gift card.
This show is for entertainment and educational purposes only and is not intended as personal financial advice. Before making any financial decision, please do your homework and consult a financial advisor as needed.